Okay, we are live. Okay, so let us begin. Want to honor everybody's time. I know it's smack in the middle of everybody's day, so there's definitely something before it, there's definitely something after, so whoever's making the time, thank you for being here. Let's do a little bit of a review, like a tiny bit of a review, just to like bring everybody back to where we are, because we actually didn't start the Tanya yet. We were just doing the introduction. If you remember, we were talking about the Baal Shem Tov, we were talking about the Maggid, and how the Alter Rebbe came about, how he was brought up in a Chassidish family, but wasn't actually in touch with the Baal Shem Tov. He was actually more in touch with the Maggid. And even the story about how he got to the Maggid is a whole story. He wasn't necessarily going to stay as a disciple of the Maggid. He left and then came back. So it was a whole development in Hasidic history and lore on how it actually came to that the Alter Rebbe was the Alter Rebbe. And we know that the Alter Rebbe put a lot of intention into writing the Tanya. He took 2 decades to write the Tanya, and it's not like he wasn't busy with other things. He had a lot of things, and he put out, the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch was put out within 2 years. But this he really labored over. And we went into the idea of what was it? Like, why did he start writing this down? Now, there was just a practical reason for it, where he was disseminating these little pamphlets of the ideas that he wanted to bring to the Jewish world. But they were getting touched. People were editing them. They were messing around with them. And so the wrong ideas were being conveyed. So that's what really pushed him to printing. But one of the ideas of why the Alter Rebbe even started writing down these ideas instead of just saying them in his discourses was because he felt he just didn't have the time to speak to everybody and give everyone their specific derech aveda of where they're supposed to be in life and what they're supposed to be working on in life. So after meeting with thousands and thousands of Hasidim, he put together these ideas so that he can convey to the masses what your Derech Aveda should be. And we spoke about how this Sefer is called Sefer Shel Beinanim. It's supposed to be a Sefer for, we're going to actually define it today, for the intermediate man, for the me and you. He wrote a Sefer Shel Tzadikim, right? And that one was burnt in the fire. Remember the Shpala Zeda? Shpala Zeda said the Sefer is not supposed to be revealed in this world, and the Alter Rebbe said, okay. And the day that the Shpala Zeda passed away, there was a fire in the Alter Rebbe's house, and that Sefer was burnt. And nothing of it remains. Sefer Shel Beinanim was written for the layman, for the me and you. Okay? And the Alter Rebbe, last time we were also talking about his approbations. He had 2 and then a 3rd approbation, an unofficial approbation. And these people are writing about what they think the Tanya is. And they write pretty similar things, that this, the Tanya, is going to help people in their Avodas Hashem. And it is the forerunner to Mashiach, and the idea is that him taking Chassidus and bringing it to the masses was preparing the people, us, for the days of Mashiach, to enhance us, to develop us, to be people who could receive the revelation of Hashem in this world. And that's what Chassidus is supposed to be. And if, I don't know if you remember, but you could go back to the other previous class. By the way, these classes are on YouTube. You could find them just to refresh your memory. But just a reminder of that story of the Alter Rebbe defending the Maggid, right? And he saved the Maggid's life with the dream, with the whole mashal of the prince and them taking that stone and grinding it down to dust and getting it into the prince's mouth in order to revive the generation. So Chassidus has this dual purpose. It's here in order to revive the generation, to bring back, literally, Yiddishkeit in its truest form, and also to prepare us for Mashiach. And that's what we spoke about the last times. So we just did that history, that buildup of what the Alter Rebbe, who he was and what Chassidus is. We spoke about Kikara Velecha Devar Ma'id, which is on the very beginning, the title page of the Alter Rebbe's Tanya, in order to help us understand what is the whole theme, what's the running theme of this entire book. And the book is based on this one pasuk in Devarim that says, Kikare velecha hadavar ma'ay beficha ubovavcha la'asaysay. And if you translate that into normal English that you and I can understand, It's basically saying, not according to the Ramban, but according to other opinions, that this matter that is very close to you, i.e. it's attainable to you, you can do this, is the matter of serving Hashem with Ava Nira, with your whole being, and you could serve Hashem, and this is easy. It's accessible. You got this. And the question is, and this is the question of the entire Tanya, how can Moshe Rabbeinu say this to all of Am Yisrael? Maybe it's easy for Moshe, but it doesn't feel easy for me. It doesn't feel easy for me to serve Hashem and at every moment give over my world to the Eibishter. What does that even mean? What does that look like? How's that even possible? What are we talking about here? Okay, so that's what the entire Tanya is going to be explaining to us, basically saying how our Avodas Hashem is accessible. In what way? How is Avodas Hashem accessible? What does that look like? I need more information. And so the Alter Rebbe is going to break down what Avodah for the layman is, and what does service of the Eibishter look like? And what is Moshe Rabbeinu actually saying? Because he was talking to the me and you. He wasn't talking to just the generation of the desert, right? He was talking to all of us, all of Am Yisrael. We were all there. So what does it mean? So the first chapter of Tanya begins with giving us some definitions, okay? So it's almost like the Alter Rebbe is like, I want you to just open up your mind, and we're going to bring up the terms, and we're going to redefine all these terms, because you might have an idea of this term, of what this word means, but in order for us to communicate effectively, I'm going to redefine this term, so every time I use it now, you'll know it in the way that I know it, okay? So the first chapter, the Alter Rebbe starts talking about Tzaddik, Rasha, Beinoni, these terms, and he redefines it. So first he starts off with the Talmudic explanation of what is a tzaddik, what is a rasha, what is a beinoni. How does the Talmud, how does halacha look at these people? Okay? So the way halacha looks at these people, or a judicial court looks at these people, or through the Talmudic lens, how we look at these definitions, is a tzaddik is someone who is 50%, more than 50% righteous. Okay, if we're going to take all of his merits and demerits, right? You would take all of his mitzvahs and his averis, and you would put them on a scale. The scale weighing down a little bit more on the side of righteousness would be the tzaddik. Okay, so in this judgment room, right? In this, before this basin, this person in this frozen frame is righteous. That's a tzaddik, according to the Talmud. According to the Talmud, what is a Rasha? The exact opposite. If you look at the merits and the demerits of this person, he is overboard when it comes to his Averis. More than 50% in the realm of Averis. And he is considered now a Rasha. What is a Beinoni? Someone who is exactly in the middle. 50-50. Right? So he's exactly with his Averis and his mitzvahs and with his Averis are exactly alike. This is according to the way the Talmud looks, or the halachic authorities would look at Tzaddik, Beinoni, Rasha, and would use those terms in the form of judgment, okay? The Alter Rebbe says, this is according to the Talmud. Now look at a different opinion, a different lens of the Torah, a different layer of the Torah, right? There's many different layers. There's Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sait. According to Sait, or according to Hasidus Kabbalah, there's a different lens. There's a different way of looking at Tzaddik, Beinoni, Rasha. So what does Kabbalah say about Tzaddik, Beinoni, Rasha? Totally different, okay? And we're going to go in accordance with the Kabbalistic approach to these terms. And this is the last time that the Alter Rebbe is going to mention the Talmud's way of looking at Tzaddik, Beinoni, Rasha. That Rasha, that is a definition. It's not the definition we're going to be using in this Sefer. So he lists it and then moves on to the Kabbalistic view of it. What is the Kabbalistic view of Tzaddik, Beinoni, Rasha? It's a little more extreme. It's a little intense, okay? Tzaddik isn't someone who has 50% more merit. Tzaddik is someone who does not sin, doesn't even have an interest in sinning. Doesn't even have the capacity for sin, okay? What is a Beinoni? Someone who has very much an interest in sinning, in Averis, but refrains and does not sin. What is a Rasha? A Rasha is someone who sins, even if infrequently, considered still a sinner, considered a Rasha. Okay, so we just took these definitions and completely reframes them. This is a completely different way of looking at what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is someone, I mean, people say all the time, like I call my children, like, what is a tzaddik? What do you want, tzaddik? Because that's just, I don't know, that's the language I grew up with in my house. And my mother's convinced that the way she talked to my brother, it helped him become a tzaddik, you know? But the idea is that that's not the tzaddik that we're talking about, because I think all of us cannot relate to this term of tzaddik. This definition of tzaddik feels very remote. A tzaddik, according to the Talmud, doesn't sin and has even no interest in sinning, doesn't even have the capacity for sin. What's a beinoni? I don't even know if I'm a beinoni. What's a beinoni? A beinoni is someone who very much has interest in sinning but controls himself and doesn't actually commit a sin. And a rasha is someone who's in the sugya, right? He is definitely sinning, but it doesn't have to mean that he does it all the time. It can mean that it's extremely infrequently, but that he has the potential for sin and does so. Oh, okay. So this is a redefinition of terms completely different than the way we've understood that. And the Alter Rebbe says the reason for this is because it's not true. Completely true, right? Why? Because think about the way that the Talmud looks at a tzaddik, beinoni, and rasha. The way that the Talmud is looking at the tzaddik, beinoni, rasha is in this frozen frame of right now in front of a judge. Are they considered good? Are they considered bad? Or are they somewhere in the middle? In this experience right now, are we going to let him go or are we going to consider him guilty? If someone is considered not guilty, it doesn't mean that they're good. It just means they're not guilty. Right? It means in this moment, they're not considered guilty. But it could be that they've done other things. They've done other wrongs. It doesn't mean that they're the most amazing person either. Why would we call them a tzaddik? But according to the Talmud, right, it's a halachic definition. So therefore, in this frozen frame, that's how we're looking at it. The Alter Rebbe is looking for truth. And when he gives you a definition, he wants it to be centered around truth. And you're going to see how this makes more sense when he continues defining terms, okay? So he says, we're looking at the actual person, not at the judgment, not at the end judgment of this person. We're looking at who they are. Is he a tzaddik? Or is he a rasha? Or is he a beinoni? We're not just looking at merits. We're looking at who he is inside him. When you slice him open, what's inside? Does he have a yetzahara? Does he not have a Yetzihara? A tzaddik does not have a Yetzihara. A beinoni has a Yetzihara but doesn't act with his Yetzihara. A rasha has a Yetzihara and acts with it sometimes or often. Right, and so the immediate question is like, wait, so now I have to look at myself as a rasha? That's pretty intense. That's very disheartening. That's a very disheartening way of looking at myself. Yes, so hang in there, because we're not judging ourselves. Immediately we go into this place of let me judge myself. We're not going into judgments, we're not personalizing, we're just looking at terms right now. And this is the way the Kabbalah looks at these terms, okay? Hang in there. Let's talk about something else. Something else that the Alter Rebbe feels like is very important for us, again, to understand and explain this wider picture, wider question of what is our life in accordance to Avodas Hashem? Like, how am I supposed to do this thing called Avodas Hashem in the world that I live in? So, the Alter Rebbe says that it's a very important thing to know that every human being has two souls, okay? And when we say this, and I know you've heard this before, I want you to think about it even more deeply and make it even more practical and make it even something that you actually think about, not just words in your head. When we say souls, when we say nefeshes, nefeshes means life source. We have two different life sources. We have two different drives. Two different ways of approaching every single situation in our life. One drive, one part of ourselves that is a complete part of ourselves, is called the godly soul. And one part of ourselves is called the animal soul, okay? Two full different personalities inside of you. 100% there, they're not going anywhere, they don't disappear. They're not like the way that you've heard the Yetzirah, where like he sits in and sometimes he sits in on your decision making and tries to influence you. No, no, no. This is a complete personality. It's a drive inside of you. It's a full-on voice, and it weighs in on every single decision. That's the Nefesh HaBahamas, and that's the Nefesh HaLakis. There's both of them. What are some character traits of the Nefesh HaLakis and the Nefesh HaBahamas? The more we understand them, this is where the Alter Rebbe is going, okay, just to point you in the direction. The more we understand them, the more we'll understand ourselves, the more we'll understand what's expected of us and how to define ourselves. Okay, so let's not jump to conclusions and start personalizing. And instead, let's actually, this is what the Alter Rebbe is trying to do, not trying to raise the caliber or raise the bar to something unattainable. He's actually trying to make it exactly attainable. He's trying to say, let's look at what you're struggling with right now. So instead of you thinking that you're a tzaddik, let me explain to you, you're not crazy. You have two drives, okay? And let's talk about those drives and what makes them you, who you are, and what makes life so challenging to serve Hashem constantly and to even expect of yourself to be a tzaddik is almost impossible, because how could you when you have this other drive that's completely you? So let's talk about them. What are the character traits of the godly soul? Character trait of the godly soul, number one, is it is selfless. Okay? It's selfless. Number two, we're gonna go into them a little bit more after. I'll just list them all off and then we'll go more deep into them. Nefesh HaLakis is selfless. The Nefesh HaLakis is a visionary. Okay, it sees beyond. The Nefesh HaLakis is trusting. Okay? The opposite is true with the Nefesh HaBahamas, literally the exact opposite. The Nefesh HaBahamas is selfish. The Nefesh HaBahamas is short-sighted. It doesn't see beyond. It sees what's right in front of it, doesn't have a vision. The Nefesh HaBahamas is worried and has doubts. The Nefesh HaBahamas has anxiety, okay? So let's define that better. And that's literally in chapter one what the Alter Rebbe starts talking about. Let's talk about this animal soul, because no one's ever talked about him before, and it's a really important thing for us to discuss. This nefesh inside of you that's driving you, that is literally at the courtroom of every decision that you're ever going to make, let's let him have a voice and see who he is. Who is he? So when we talk about the animal soul, and why does the Alter Rebbe choose to call him an animal soul, it's important to discuss, like, what is an animal, right? What is an animal, and why are we calling him an animal? Is an animal a bad thing? Obviously not, right? Animals are just living creatures. What does an animal do? It just wants to survive. It just wants to make sure that its children survive, and it eats, and it sleeps, and it lives its life. It's just focused on this and the babies and making sure that it procreates. That's literally all that the animal's life is about. Is that a bad thing? Absolutely not. It is selfish. It's self-oriented. It's this is what I have to do to survive, and I will do whatever it takes to survive. That's not a bad thing. It just is. Right? Just like in a way, when you look at a baby, right? When you look at a tiny little baby, a baby's born, what are they doing? They're crying because they're hungry or they're dirty or they're uncomfortable, right? And that's all that matters. It's not like a baby is thinking, what is my purpose in this world? Or thinking about, I don't know, their twin and saying, hey, she's hungry too. What do we do about her? There's none of that. It's just about the immaturity of my experience, and my experience is all that matters. That's perfectly okay, and that's fine. That's just the experience of a human being that hasn't yet fully developed. But an animal is always going to live that life. Short-sighted, selfish, and not seeing beyond. That's all that's important, right? There's an interesting mashal that I heard about. It's honestly, it's not really so important, but it just helps bring it a little bit to light. So the mashal is two animals having a conversation, a giraffe and a goat, right? There's many differences between the giraffe and the goat. But one of the differences is that the giraffe, even though it is a vegetarian and it actually has similar tendencies to the goat, it has this really long neck and its face is pointed upward and it could see the entire sky. It sees a lot more, right? It has more vision, has more perspective than the goat who's angled to the ground, okay? So the giraffe is speaking to the goat and he says, you have no idea what's out there. Like if you just lifted your face and your head, your eyes to the sky, you would see clouds. You would see the sky. You'd be able to see the trees, the tops of trees, like how beautiful it is. You could smell. You could use all of your senses to just enjoy this panoramic view. And the goat can't understand. It's like, why do I have to see it? Can I eat it? Is the sky edible? And the giraffe says, no, you're missing the point. Just pick up your eyes. So the goat stretches his head and he finally like picks up his eyes so he could see the sky and see the clouds. And he still doesn't understand. What is the relevance to me? Who cares about the sky? Who cares about the clouds? I don't care about the trees. I can't reach that. The giraffe can reach the leaves and eat it. I can't. What is that? That's short-sighted. Right? He doesn't want to see beyond. It doesn't matter to him. What matters to him is here, and the grass is here. He doesn't need to see beyond. He doesn't need to see outside of him. He just needs to see what is relevant right now, here and now. There's nothing wrong with the animal soul's perspective. However, just think about a human being having an animal soul. How does that translate? God doesn't interest me, right? The whole concept of God or religion or searching beyond any like queries about the universe, all of that is not animal soul business because the animal soul is not interested in the beyond. He's interested in the here and now. He's interested in what serves him. Now, certain scientists are delving into the beyond, and human beings are a little bit more than animals in that they do go a little bit more beyond. But ultimately, at its core, it's a selfish experience. I'm curious about this. I want to know. I want to be the one to discover. I want to be the one to teach. Okay? That's all animal soul. Right? So the selfishness, the short-sightedness, and then the worriedness, the anxiety. Why? It comes from that short-sightedness, that ability to only see myself. Well, if I'm only looking at myself and I'm so driven to take care of myself, the next step is, that's really scary, right? All I have to do is survive. And surviving is being in a state of victimhood. Like, it's me against the world. If I had a knowledge of Hashem in my life, if I understood that Hashem actually is involved in my world, then I wouldn't have the anxiety of trying to survive all the time. So if you go to the flip side and you look at the nefesh elikis, the godly soul, who's the exact opposite, right? So the godly soul is selfless. He's a visionary. He sees beyond. He is trusting. Well, that whole experience happens because he is witnessing Hashem as a truth on a constant basis. So he naturally sees beyond. He sees on a constant basis how Hashem is involved in his world, how Hashem is carrying through him through his life. His character trait is to reach out to truth, to beyond surface level, right? So the animal soul sees what's right in front of him, the grass that I'm nibbling at right now, right here. This is what matters. The godly soul is like, I need to understand purpose. I need to understand beyond because I want to nail the truth. That's what I'm going for. I'm going straight to the truth. That's the character trait of the godly soul. Wanting to know the core, wanting to find God, wanting to see God all the time. And one of the character traits that you'll see with the godly soul is an element of calm. He's always calm. He's not anxious. He's okay because Hashem is taking care of him. Hashem is involved in his life. It's not him against the world. It's safe here, right? There's no survival. It's all good because he's witnessing Hashem and the beyond constantly in his life. So an interesting example of this is a funny example, but interesting. So with the story of Adam and Chava, everyone gets their own punishments. What's the punishment of the snake? That he will eat the the dirt of the earth. He will eat the dust of the land for the rest of his life, right? I don't know what that means practically, because I know snakes eat a lot of other things, but according to the Torah, he's eating the dust of the earth, okay? So someone once asked, why is that a punishment? In fact, like, that actually seems really nice to always, right? There will always be dust of the earth, so I'll always be provided for. I'll always have what I need. That actually feels great. That's almost like a gift. And the answer was this, I don't remember who it was, like a mashgiach in the yeshiva said, the snake who's constantly eating the dust of the earth is worried that once he eats up the earth, what's he gonna eat? What's gonna happen then? And that's exactly the character trait of the animal soul. Even if you have everything set up for you, we live in a time period where we are wealthier, more provided for than any other time in history, and we have never seen more anxiety than this generation. That's baffling. The reason for that is because we're all functioning from a place of the animal soul. No matter what, you're gonna worry. No matter what, you're gonna have anxiety, even if things are assured, because Hashem is not in that picture and you're still in that survival mode. So therefore, even if there's nothing really to worry about, we're just gonna make things up to worry about, because that's what we do. We don't know another way. We don't go beyond. We stay here, short-sighted, okay? Why is this so important? Because I'm just gonna pause for a minute because I thought it was so beautiful. So Rabbi Paltiel, who I was listening to his class before class, he shares about how the Rebbe was talking about this main man whose name is Howard Hughes. Does anyone know who this is? Okay. Who was Howard Hughes?
He was a...
I know the name.
A multimillionaire.
Right.
He was a recluse.
Okay. And afraid of everybody, right. Thought everyone was trying to kill him. Like, wore gloves, made people taste the food before he ate them, but I don't know how he made his wealth.
In the news industry,
he owned a newspaper. I need to read up a little bit more about him. So a really interesting person. The Rebbe spoke about him in a sicha. What do you say?
News and film.
Okay, so really interesting person. And the Rebbe noted in the sicha that a person could have everything at their disposal and still be afraid for their life, still be in this state of victimhood or survival mode. And what that is just a short-sightedness, a lack of God in your life, and not seeing beyond. And the reason why I'm just bringing it in, because I thought it was so beautiful, so Rabbi Paltiel is mentioning this. How does he remember this? He was just maybe 6 years old, but his father would bring him to listen to the Farbringens, which would last 5-6 hours, and his father would put one son on one knee and one son on the other knee, you know, hold them for 6 hours, listening to the Rebbe talk. And, you know, some people nowadays would say, like, oh, that's torture. Why would he do that to a young kid? But the way that Rabbi Paltiel talks about it, about his father, he mentions it just on the side. He says, my father was so incredible that he decided to take us to the sicha for 6 hours because he really believed that I would understand it and I was listening and that I would be able to take it into my heart. And he said, at this point, when the Rebbe mentioned this, he took me and he's like, listen to what the Rebbe is saying. The Rebbe is saying that no matter what, you could be afraid. You could always be afraid. But if you bring Hashem into your life, you don't have to be afraid. And he still remembers it from such a young age because his father made that sacrifice and really believed that his son would understand this and take it in. So I just thought that was beautiful. Appreciation and also the capacity of what our children can take in more than what we expect that they could. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about this godly soul versus the animal soul and these two drives that you have within you. And they're so different. They're exact opposites. And yet they are constantly coming to the table with their two different voices, both of them trying to convince you to do what they want. Okay? So what does this have to do with our ultimate question? Our ultimate question is, how do I serve Hashem? So if I have these two drives inside of me and I understand them a little bit better, it makes a lot of sense to know oh my goodness, all the time I'm struggling between doing the right thing and the wrong thing. But it's not because I'm a bad person. It's not because I live not in accordance with Hashem enough. It's because I literally have something inside of me that's just trying to survive. It's just trying to fit in this world. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into a different, it broadens the subject just to help you understand and help you feel a little bit more comfortable with yourself and how you've been functioning up until now. The Alter Rebbe says, not only do you have an animal soul and the godly soul inside of you, but let's talk about the world at large. What is the world at large? And the Alter Rebbe, who goes straight for truth when he's making these definitions, says, there's two different modes of seeing this world. There's two different ways that this world manifests itself. There's God, and there's other than God. There's Hashem, there's holiness, there's Kedusha, and there's otherness, which is Klipa. What is Klipa? Klipa means, in Hebrew, it means a shell. It means something that's covering holiness, right? Nothing could really exist in this world without Hashem, so it's all Hashem, but it's just not revealed Hashem, which means if you're looking at this world, what are you witnessing? Are you seeing revelation of God? Or are you seeing Klipa? And the answer to that question, more often than not, is when you look at this world out of your two eyes, what are you seeing? You're seeing Klipa. You're seeing otherness. You're seeing something that covers Hashem. You're not seeing revelation of Him. You're not witnessing miracles at every given moment. So let's bring that into the conversation now when we talk about Aveda. This person, right, who is given two drives, one of those drives being very short-sighted, very selfish, very much in a state of, I just have to make sure that everything's okay so that I feel secure and safe and survive this world. So that person is living in a world, that person's living in a world that is giving the exact mental feedback that I'm experiencing, right? The world is literally telling me, they're also, right? Don't go beyond. Stay short-sighted. There is no God. You have to survive, right? This is the message in the world that I'm living actually in. It's not just a message that's coming from inside of me. It's a message that I'm getting from everything that I'm looking at. That's a very hard world to survive in, right? So this is the Alter Rebbe trying to be empathetic to the Beinoni's experience. Not trying to make you feel like you're less than, actually trying to say, I see you and I see what you're up against. Kedusha is here, but there's also a lot of Klipa. What to do about this? How are we supposed to function in this world? So the Alter Rebbe says that in order for something to actually be holy, okay, so he's segueing into this Kedusha conversation, in order for it to be holy, how does Hashem say that something can actually become holy? It's only holy if it actually has humility. Okay, what does that mean? Hashem only wants to dwell in something that makes space for Him, something that acknowledges Him. Otherwise, it's covered, right? So that klipa has to somehow make space so that the light can shine out from it, so that it could be revealed for what it truly is, which is holiness, which is Hashem. So the only way for holiness really to exist or for it to be revealed or to be manifest in this world is if there's somewhat of this experience of acknowledging Him, of removing the klipa, of making space, of humility. Okay? Why is the Alter Rebbe bringing that into the conversation, right? Why is that going to be like some sort of enlightenment to us? Because the only way for us to be able to get in touch with that side of ourselves that is truth, that sees Hashem, that looks beyond, that is aligned with purpose, that is focused on a calm because it witnesses Hashem, the only way to get there is to actually be humble. And to acknowledge God, and to listen to that nefesh, to listen to that voice, to allow it to even have space to come to the table. But more often than not, the other voice is so loud, it's clamoring in our ears, trying to convince us we have to survive, you have to survive. We all know what survival mode is, right? Fight, flee, freeze, fawn, right? when someone's in that place, you don't have your prefrontal cortex involved. You're just running or freezing or doing because you're just acting from a space of survival. You can't hear anything, right? You can't hear a voice of reason. You can't have a voice, you can't hear a voice that's saying, well, where is Hashem in this picture? Let's just stop for a moment and see what Hashem wants from me right now. It's very hard to pause and acknowledge Hashem or to make space for him or for that voice in your experience, especially because you're in this whole feedback, right? The voice inside of you, the voice that's coming at you from the world. So how to reveal Kedusha? How to make sure that this world is a place of Kedusha, i.e. how to serve him and serve the purpose of the world, revealing Kedusha, how to do such a thing? So the Alter Rebbe is laying the groundwork and he's saying, I'm going to help you. I just first want to present to you everything that's going on. Let's just lay out the facts. And once we have the facts on the ground, we'll be able to navigate this. But first we have to redefine these terms. What is Kedusha? What is the opposite of Kedusha, right? So the other aspect that the Alter Rebbe wants to bring out when he says Kedusha and opposite of Kedusha is he's trying to say when it comes to opposite of Kedusha, and you go back to the halachic terms, right? So halachic terms for a second. There's according to Avaita, you have an obligation, right? So you have a mitzvah, and you have something you have to refrain from, and then you have a bunch of neutrality, okay? Right? The neutral realm. So you could eat kosher pizza from Pizza Maven. You can't eat non-kosher pizza from a different place. You could eat vegetables, I don't know, from anywhere, right? Because they're vegetables and they grow out of the ground. That's neutral, right? This was made sure that it was kosher, that's not, and this is neutral. When it comes to looking at the world from this redefined term of Kedusha versus otherness, what now happens is that even the realm of neutral is not necessarily holy. Okay? So we're also kind of like bringing your whole Avaida to a whole nother level where if you're, let's say, not sinning all day, right? Let's say you don't eat the not kosher pizza and you've never eaten not kosher pizza. Amazing. Good for you. Does that make you holy? No. We just redefined things. We just made things completely different. Holiness is revealing God. It's taking away klipa. It's not just good or bad or in the between, according to the Talmud or according to Halacha or according to a Beis Din in the freeze moment. The real world, the real truth that the Alter Rebbe wants to bring to us, the purpose of the world, is to get aligned with Kedusha, the real essence of what's happening here, revealing God. Revealing God is not good or bad or middle. Revealing God is taking away any otherness. So that means that even in the realm of neutral, we need to figure out a way to reveal godliness even in the realm of neutral, not just in the chayiv obligation to do good things, right? So good, you made a bracha on your pizza. Does that make you good? It means you did something good, but did you reveal godliness in the eating of the pizza by saying a bracha? Or did you reveal godliness by whatever it is that we're trying to do? Eating pizza is not a mitzvah, right? So that actually would be in the realm of neutral, sorry. So like, let's say you shook your lulav and esrog. Does that make you good? It means you did a good thing. Did you reveal godliness? Yes, because you did a mitzvah. Now let's go to the realm of neutral. Food. You made a bracha. Good. But did you reveal the godliness within that food? Did you make that food kadosh? I don't know. It depends. It depends on your experience. Was it all about the taste? And was it all about how it's serving you? And it's making sure that you're just staying alive and survival mode. And it's serving your nefesh abahamas, your animal soul, which is not bad. It just means that it's not Kedusha. Okay, so the Alter Rebbe is taking all of these ideas and he's really changing them so that we're actually going to understand what our true Avaida is and be laser focused on what that Avaida is. It's not about judging ourselves. It's not about putting ourselves into categories. It's introducing an entirely new purpose. We need to reveal Kedusha in this world. And the way to do that is to get attuned to this other voice, this voice of the godly soul inside of you, that voice that you have inside of you that dictates that there's a God right here, that there's purpose, that we have to go a little bit deeper, and that we have to experience his presence as something that's close to us and feel that sense of calm. as opposed to the Nefesh of Bahamas, who's not bad. He's just surviving, and that's part of who we are. And that's how Hashem made us, and we constantly have the choice whether we want to navigate our world or our day from a place of Kedusha, where we're revealing God, we're revealing holiness, we're exposing Hashem beneath the layers of Klipa, or we just choose to stay in the realm of Klipa. And when I talk about Klipa, I'm talking even just in the realm of neutral Klipa, just regular Klipa that covers over Hashem. There's other kinds of Klipas that are, that the Alter Rebbe describes, which are called Klipa, Shalosh Klipas HaTemeis, which are a Klipa that covers over godliness in a way that cannot be redeemed. And that would be, let's say, performing an Avera. When someone does an Avera, what they're doing is they're taking the holiness and they're trapping it, so that not just are they not revealing it, they're trapping it. They're not allowing Hashem to be exposed. Klipas Naiga, which is a different category of Klipa, of covering, has the ability, it's this neutral mode where you could just tear away the layer and Hashem is right there. So what we're going to now go into is with these new defined terms, right? The animal soul is not bad, it's just self-centered, short-sighted, and worried. The godly soul is the exact opposite. Sees Hashem, sees purpose, loves going beyond, and is experiencing calm, feels connected to Hashem at every given moment. And when we also redefine, broaden our reality and look around and say, what is this world? It's just two different modes. It's Kedusha or it's Klipa. What am I seeing when I look at the world? More often than not, I'm seeing Klipa. How can I reveal the Kedusha? I have to do it in a way of acknowledging and humility. What is that going to look like? That's going to be the whole Tanya, talking about what does it mean to make space for Hashem in this world, within yourself, how to bring him back or peel away the layers so we could actually see him. That's what we're going to be talking about the entire time. Okay? Right. It depends. So that's where it gets a little bit complicated, because technically making a bracha is part of a chayv, right? It's an obligation. So when you're doing it, you still are doing the right thing. I'm trying to think of a better example of something that's like just super neutral, getting dressed, right? It's funny because even with getting dressed, you could do it according to halacha or not, right? But the idea is if you have intention, then what you're doing is revealing Hashem. Or you could get dressed and you're not even thinking about how you got dressed, you just did it. It's just neutral. So you could hear how the way that we've looked at the world and ourselves and how we function in this world has been kind of like almost like this, like it's good or bad, it's kind of simple. And the Alter Rebbe almost like ups the ante, makes it sound so much more unattainable, and in a way also has a tremendous amount of understanding of where we're coming from and what we're struggling with. So he really broadens the whole question. It's almost like what you'll see a lot with certain divrei Torah, where you ask the question and then you strengthen the question. You ask another question and make the question even stronger, and then you bring in the answer. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, let's just be truthful and honest about what the world is really all about, what you are all about, what's happening inside of you, and then I'll give you some advice. Yeah? Okay, so that is the beginning of chapter one. We have a little bit more to discuss, and then we're going to dive into chapter two.
Can I comment?
Yeah.
Yeah. The challenge is not to do it by rote. I mean, that is the steps, and really when you say the blessing, whether you're aware or not, you're drawing godliness down upon yourself.
Except when somebody says, how are you? You can say, oh, I'm good. Or you can really say, oh, you know, I am good. I'm good. Right?
Yeah. I like that example, because the Baal Shem Tov made such a huge emphasis on people saying Baruch Hashem, thank you Hashem. And it was like, people would say, why are you making such a big deal about this simple person saying Baruch Hashem? Why are you always asking everybody how they're doing? And the Baal Shem Tov said, because that's exactly it. In your everyday life, can you acknowledge the bracha that Hashem brought to you in your everyday life, this world? It's not just about learning Torah, and that's considered good, and not learning Torah is considered bad. No. The real truth is that revealing Hashem is Kedusha. That's our emphasis here, not just studying Torah and performing mitzvahs, because that's, of course, the purpose. But let's really define what the purpose is. Kedusha versus otherness. So that's a great example. Yeah.
You were talking about the three impure, because,
yeah.
Because a neveir can be, the godliness can be revealed. There are certain neveirs that it can't. But it's not every neveir that godliness can be revealed.
Like what?
Let's say you ate something that you're not supposed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the inner intention could be tshuva. And when you have that inner intention, you do release. It doesn't stay totally impure. My understanding is that the three impure creatures are of a whole different level that cannot be redeemed.
So when you're bringing in the concept of teshuva, right? So that's a whole nother concept. And there are certain types of teshuva that can undo the damage of an avera. But an avera,
the three totally impure tefas, whatever they may be.
Right. You're saying like that's the avada of the tzaddik. So there's a lot more discussion on that later in the Tanya, but like the way that it sees it, it's almost like, so there's a development of thought for sure. There's an unfolding. That's for sure what the Tanya is. But the way we see it in the beginning, right, is that this is otherness, and otherness that's not considered in the realm of neutral. So therefore, it's trapped. It's more trapped. Later, when we introduce tshuva, we could see, like, what can we still save from that trapped state? Because, like, the energy, the godly energy from an avera. Yeah, you have questions?
No, I was just, you were saying that sometimes when we say a bracha, it may not do it. And I was remembering a story that I heard about a young Israeli boy that was visiting an ashram in India, and they were supposed to be in a code of silence, and someone passed him an apple, and without thinking, by rote,
yeah, no, I agree with you. And the idea is that if you make the bracha, you still did the obligation, which is what Hashem ultimately wants. We're going to talk about that later in further chapters. And there's also the concept of having kavana and intention and humility, and that's what we're trying to stress here. But you're 100% right that when you do the act itself is important and does have an impact. And that's a really cool story. Yeah. Yeah.
When you were talking about sharing kedusha through speech, your mouth is through eye contact, through hearing, whatever it is your experiences, because I have a lot of experiences, it's a big test for me.
Uh-huh.
But when you have these experiences, you must be very careful with your atmosphere. Would you say the environment plays a big deal in either reflecting it back to you, the kedusha, or shutting it down? So the environment you're in might not see you as a light. They might just see you as, you know, some person who has an opinion and hasn't done the years of humility and tests and all that. They just see another person. The big world's so busy. I mean, you got to find the right environment to find another person who's cognizant of that energy and wants to share in it and wants to elevate it. Because otherwise, you can be shut down really quickly. And you're very vulnerable in that position of being with the holiness, the divine Shekhinah, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
By his favors, right? So when you're in a state like that, I mean, it makes me want to cry, but it really is serious.
Yeah.
Because your environment plays a really big part, and you have to be protecting yourself.
Hmm. Yeah.
But the environment's so quick these days.
Yeah.
Everybody's so intellectual and rational these days. It's like the era of the rational, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But there are times when you're feeling really good and you're in a place of the Shekhinah, and people just don't sense it or see it or want it. They don't even know it's there.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of just do it with yourself alone with God.
Yeah.
And you have to make peace with that.
That's okay.
And that's a good prayer, human prayer, because that's like a really deep, like what you're just talking about.
Yeah.
In Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Thank
you for sharing. Yeah. Thank you.
I just think it's really, really cool. And more things we need to hear about these days. Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
And holiness and the klipa that hides it. And becoming much more sensitive to the kedusha than the other stuff.
Thank you.